Maharaj, there is a question from Gupta Govardhan. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 16, verse 10, it is said about the soul, and I will recite the shloka. Nahyasyasti priyah kaschin napriyah svah paropiva ekah sarvat hiyam drashta kartrinam guna dashoyaho. And translation. For this living entity, no one is dear, nor is anyone unfavorable. He makes no distinction between that which is his own and that which belongs to anyone else. He is one without a second. In other words, he is not affected by friends and enemies, well-wishers or mischief-mongers. He is only an observer, a witness of the different qualities of men. So the question is, when and how then the soul expresses her feelings, and does she have any?
When and how
the soul expresses her feelings.
Does the soul express her feelings?
Uh-huh.
And?
And does she have any feelings, the soul?
Well, what is being described there sounds like the Paramatma. Like in the Gita, Upadrishtanumanta cha bharta bhokta maheshwara paramatmeti chapyukto dehismen purushapura. Overseer, observer. Sometimes Srila Guru Maharaj adds, you know, passive, neutral. But this points to the actual situation that we find ourselves in, as where there's always this desire for sensual expression. Like we hear every night around this time, the tokay lizard going around making that sound. And on, you know, cursory research, Googling reveals that's their mating call. So it's called Manu had, you know, tears in his eyes when he spoke the famous sloka, tamasa bahurupena vestita karmahetuna. Saying all these different life forms you see, the trees, the lizards, the birds, the beasts, the owl we had, the human beings, that they're vestita, vesh means dress, vestita karmahetuna. They're dressed in their karma. Their karma is the cause of the dress that they're in presently. And we see, we hear from Bhagavad Gita, that famous, there's the tokay, right on cue. Iswaranam satyam brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra rudrani maya. The bodies compared to yantram means, in this context, a machine. Now, we see on all these levels of life forms, jalaja navalakani stavara lakabhingshati krimaya rudra sankhaka, so many aquatics, so many plants, trees. Now we're seeing the flowers, so many flowers, and the bees. They're attracted to the flowers. signs as they're attracted by the color. That's why the flowers have some beautiful color. Then they go and they're nectar seekers. And they want to extract the nectar, and then we're told, in the process, their bodies are the madness of their nectar extraction, you could say. Because they're, it may seem like a minuscule amount to us. When I was a child, where I lived, honeysuckles were in the forest, and we would go to the forest, and you pick these honeysuckles and pull the bundle, and there was like one drop of nectar in every honeysuckle. So you think, oh, it tastes so sweet and so, but like you have to go through so much trouble to get this one drop of nectar. That's if you're human-sized. If you're the size of a bee, you're drinking deep. And then in the madness of their intoxication, they go to another flower, another flower, another flower, and they're carrying pollen, and they're pollinating as they go along. So how wonderful is the material nature? How beautiful and perfect. And it looks so beautiful. But as we told, Bhammanu's crying, saying, yes, it looks so beautiful, but they're dressed in their karma, suffering, karmic outcome. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Bhog, tyag, but actually it's the suffering after the bhog that leads to tyag. So, and I've mentioned when I was a child, again, in the woods, we called it the woods, because it wasn't like a proper forest. We'd go to the woods, pick berries, blackberries particularly, and they grow on bushes close to the ground. And I remember you pull them back and you can find these very juicy blackberries, almost so heavy they're ready to like fall off and hit the ground. And I recall this one time there, because we would put the, like, take off your baseball cap, put the berries in your baseball cap. The average baseball cap looked purple on the inside. But I remember this one time crawling and then peeling back the bushes, and there was a turtle there. And the turtle's whole face was covered in blackberry. And he's like, and he's not like, looks like blackberry jam all over his mouth, but blackberry just everywhere. And he's like, and I'd crawl, so we're like face to face. And at that moment, I realized we're both interested in the same thing on some level. I thought, oh, you want to enjoy the sweet, I also want to enjoy that sweetness. We're competing somewhat, like, all right, you can have a few, I'm probably taking more. But that principle is there, is what I mean to say. This principle, even on comparatively lower forms of life, this sweetness-seeking principle, it's not exactly the same, but Freud called it the pleasure principle, meaning wanting to avoid suffering and seeking pleasure. But here we see at least that they're seeking. And this is dealt with in the Bhagavatam in different places. Anamoy, pranamoy. Like, anamoy means on the lowest level, an amoeba is seeking nourishment of some kind. Anamoy, pranamoy, gyanamoy, vijnanamoy. It moves along that way. Manomoy, I think I left out. But so this is observable and unavoidable, But one thing we can learn from that is if we take it as we do, that the soul is animating the body, then it shows that consistently across the board in the species, there's this type of search and seeking sense fulfillment, a type of sensuality. So the Gita sloka is saying, the soul situated as though on a machine made out of material energy, and it gets what? A particular type of eye, ear, nose, tongue. Have you ever seen the tongue of a butterfly? Of course you can, on the internet. It's like a long spiral. It's actually, I mean, it's amazing looking. It's this spiral thing that, you know, comes, and it allows them to do the same thing, the nectar seeking. So that principle is there, inescapably. And for those engaged in spiritual culture, they can misconceive that, because generally we're told, you know, sense restriction, regulating the senses, withdrawing, you know, we said the other day, the Gita, what was that? Yada sangharate chayan kurmonangiva sangchayam. Like the tortoise who withdraws his limbs in the shell, the spiritually progressive soul, he's withdrawing the senses from the objects of the senses. So it's easy to conclude, oh, so the spiritually advanced, they withdraw from that plane and they enter a plane where then obviously there must not be any of that there. No sense engagement. But that's not the position of the Vaishnavas. And actually, this is the point. It's not just interesting anecdotally or peripherally, but this is the point. In fact, when Narada is chastising Vyas, Vyas is, remember, he's giving this Bhagavatam. It's interesting. On the one hand, he's telling it. On the other hand, he's one of the characters. He has a recurrent role in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, there's also what was told by Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj and Sutta Goswami to the sages. But the part about Vyas, Narada coming to Vyas, in essence, he's telling him that because you haven't clearly expressed, you know, the hypersensuality of the spiritual world, you leave people to conclude erroneously that the only plane for sense expression, and by extension, you know, emotional sensual engagement, is in this world, in the objective world. And although that wasn't your intention, really what people see most in what you've given is that when they recognize they're in a diseased condition of life, you've given some prescription how to be cured, to rid oneself of the disease. But you don't express clearly and explicitly what is a healthy life. You're saying, here's this world, karma, action and reaction, bogue, duke, and tya, and you're describing all these things and giving them a path. So here's how you can successfully navigate the objective world. And you leave them the impression that this is the only plane for sensual expression. Right? So you must tell them about the super sensual world of Krishna. Muktir hit vanyata rupam swaropena vibhastiti. They can't think that mukti just means freedom from negative engagement, but it must and achieving some sort of neutral position, but rather that there's possibility for sensual expression in the spiritual world. That's why when Sukadeva Goswami, by way of his own introduction, says, Parinishtitopi Naragunye Uttama Shloka Lilaya Grihita Cheta Rajarse Akyanam Yaraditaban. Saying, I was situated in the Nirguna plane above the objective world and mundane sense engagement. But then when I heard Uttama Shloka, these beautiful descriptions of the pastimes of Krishna with Radharani and Brajagopis, my consciousness was captured and carried away to another plane that I didn't know existed previously. So he's saying, really, that's the world where the soul is expressing fully and perfectly all the possibility of sense expression. Hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, everything is there. Right. What is the verse? Rupa Goswami has his own sloka, but quotes Narada Pancharatra, Narada again. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tatparatena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktiruchate. It's very interesting here. That he describes Krishna as Rishikesh. And Rishikena, he's saying that you can serve Krishna with your senses. He is the object of the senses. So naturally, you should be able to serve. Seva should involve hearing, seeing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, all of these things. But in the, when it says sarva upadi vinirmuktam, sarva upadi, often rendered as designation, but interestingly, in the Sanskrit dictionary, one of the synonyms is substitutes. And I like that because another reading is, when you've given up all these other things that you're substituting for Hrishikesh, Govinda, it's madness. Whose very name indicates that he's the ultimate object of seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. If turned your back on that and you're accepting so many substitutes for that. Substitute hearing, seeing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. So that soul who at present is covered by layers of acquired prejudice, acquired tendency, what can they feel properly under these layers? It's like when Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami are talking about the tongue. Either you take it jaundiced or clay-coated, whichever way you want to go, they're saying, how can it relish the sweetness of the holy name of Krishna, which by its very nature is not only sweet, but like sweetness personified to an infinite degree, with that jaundiced tongue will think it's something bitter and unpleasant. So, how the jaundiced tongue, the jaundiced eye, and all the other senses, since really the soul is buried under layers of misconceived notions of self. Bhumirapo analobayu kamano buddhirevacha ahankara itiyame bina prakritirashtadha. I have found it interesting. This verse in the Bhagavad Gita, It says earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. These are the eight layers of covering, right? Prakriti. But it says in the next verse, and this is critical, it says, apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param jivabhuta mahabaho yayetam daryate jagat. Saying, but there's another type of prakriti that's superior to all of these things. Jiva. So then just it's a very simple statement, but very profound. And Guru Maharaj extracts a lot from here. So it just listed, delineated, what are the eight coverings? Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. So it's saying the soul or the Atma is param. It's above these. So that means that the mind, intelligence, and ego are inferior, or, you know, beneath the soul. So Guru Maharaj connects this in this way by saying this is one of the flaws of Prakriti Sahajism, is they think by reconditioning these mundane elements, which are lower than the soul, that somehow you'll be in the Paramatma world. But in this verse, very simple, it says, the soul is above mind, intellect, and ego. So why should you go back down to mind, intellect, and ego to discover your soul? That's backwards. But, lest we conclude, oh, then the soul, the Atma is just, when freed of all these coverings, what is it? Light? An abstract spiritual substance devoid of all sensual possibility? Like I told the professor, or asked the professor on the Air China flight, when I said to him, because I was thinking of like these flowers. And so he's the professor at one of the best universities in America teaching advanced computer science. So I thought, Krishna, you're so kind that you allow me to, you know, he's my companion for the flight. So I can test my theories under the influence of Guru Maharaj's conception. I said, so I can ask you a few questions? Sure. He said, so like this. These beautiful, fragrant flowers. He said, can you say with absolute certainty the original source of these has no olfactory capacity, cannot smell them? I didn't ask much, just this one I'm saying. Just, so the original source of this beautiful, intoxicating fragrance, mind-altering, for us, and driving the bees mad, right? They're charmed by the beauty, they're extracting the nectar. So the original source, can you say with absolute certainty, not just say, but with absolute certainty, can you say that the original source has no olfactory capacity, cannot smell them? And he said, as you have phrased this question, with the words absolute certainty, he's honest. And maybe his defenses were down. He said, no, I can't. He gave an honest answer. He may not believe that, but he said, no, with absolute certainty, I cannot deny that possibility. And so I said, then I don't need to ask you the other questions, because I was going to form the same question for sight beauty, sound beauty, taste, what is tasteful, for each one of the senses. And when the Anandamoy, the Chinese girl, was here, and she brought her English teachers, they're British, who were teaching English in China. And when I told them this, whatever their belief is, but when I told them this, one of them, and he went like, aha, Because he understood the implications. The implications being profound. It's saying, then the original source can see, hear, taste, touch, smell, and feel. That's astonishing and happy. It's good news. Mam evangsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. And that means Krishna. And he's saying, and you, the jivas, they're my angsas. They're like me. All these things I can do, they can do. What's the difference? Is magnitude. The infinite and the finite, or in the infinitesimal. In one place, Prabhupada had the jiva souls, they are the infinitesimal complementary aspects of the infinite. It's a very beautiful thing. And so Narada is telling Vyas, you have to tell these people clearly that not just, you know, they're suffering in the material world, follow these rules and you can navigate this world, live here relatively successfully, have a happy family life. No. Then they'll never want to escape. Because you have to tell them, there's this possibility in the upper world for all the substitutes, like they have that explained, except no substitute, all the substitutes, things that are being substituted for pleasure proper, beauty proper, cannot really, truly satisfy the soul. They'll only find the satisfaction when you connect their senses to, we can say, he's the Lord of the senses, but in the sense of that also, like the object, the ultimate objects of the senses. This is a thrilling proposition if we consider it carefully. That means then they're above the mundane plane, where Atma world begins, then the same sequence will come again, but of a spiritual quality. So there must be spiritual mind, intelligence, and the ego of a servitor as opposed to an exploiting unit. So muktir hitvanyata rupam swaropena vivastiti, Vyas is saying, real mukti, real liberation is not mere, relief from negative engagement, but it means positive engagement in the spiritual world. How? Swarup, the swarup of jiva has senses like Krishna. Can see, hear, taste, touch, smell, feel. But Krishna is the object of those senses. We're always searching. We want to see beautiful things. We want to relish tasteful things. We like to hear beautiful sounds, right? Touch things that are very pleasing to the touch. Right? All of these things. What did I leave out? No, speaking or... Anyway, the sense of all these... Yes. So, we're trying to satisfy ourselves with substitutes for something that is not ideal, ultimate beauty. And we're trying to convince ourselves that that's our lot, that's the world, that's life. You know, get used to it, make the best use of a bad bargain. And when, you know, we hear Romeo and Juliet, and everyone's saying, oh, that's what I want, that. We want that kind of undying, you know, unconditional love. And Romeo and Juliet, I think it's not coincidence that they're 14 years old. So that means they're in one sense, it's so classic and ideal, like they're unsullied by the world of experience. That's why they're 14. So they can have this ideal love, unconditional love for one another. But we, you know how Romeo and Juliet ends? I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but it's as if to tell us that sort of ideal love, it can't live in this world. In this world, it's a Shakespeare play, it's a fantasy, it's a love song, it's a love story, it's a movie. It's not going to happen in real life. And I'm not saying this, but they're saying that. I'm on their behalf, I'm making these observations. But I'm the believer that there must be a plane where that sort of unconditional, romantic, forever love exists, where that ideal exists. I don't believe that. So then by the time you're 16, 18, 20, you have to start going, there's always some adult who comes and says, well, that's life, that's what the world is, nobody can stay in love, you know, forever, and, you know, and they come with some horrible song and dance like that. Not a good song, and it's a bad dance. And they try and tell somebody, like, this is what life is, this is what the world is. And so it's soul-crushing information, right? Objective experience. And it leaves people bitter or resentful and so many things. And these make the stories of literature and songs and all those things that capture our minds, our imagination, and the heart. So Narada he's telling Vyas, you have to express that this prospect, this possibility is there in a realistic way in the spiritual world, so that people will come to the conclusion, why should I accept the substitutes of the objective world when what I really seek is in the upper subjective world, in the spiritual world? And let me accept the minimum of these things while I'm here and successfully transition out of this plane into that world, from the world of exploitation to the world of dedication. And you say, does the soul have emotions? Well, Rupa Goswami gives that sequence. So we can understand what it is and also have some hope. Shraddha, sarusanga, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti, nishta, ruchi, ashakti, bhav, prem. And really beginning with sarusanga. Really, by the grace of the sadhus, coming in connection with them, Shraddha is awakened. And what does that mean? It means what we hear from Krishna conscious agents, although we can't comprehend it entirely, something about it captures our attention, our imagination, our sense of prospect and aspiration. It resonates in the heart. Like the poet says, in the deep heart's core, there's some resonance there with the statements of Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnav. And as I say, we cannot fully articulate that, but there's something that resonates in the deep heart's core that inspires us to come forward. As another poet says, the heart leaps up. And it recognizes that this is its own and it wants to move in this direction. So, Shraddha, Sarusanga, Bhajana Kriya, under the guidance of the sadhus, we engage in spiritual practices. anartha nivritti, and gradually misconception starts becoming converted into proper conception. Then what? Nishta. As I mentioned many times, the surrealist painter, Salvador Dali, who was quite a character and very unpredictable in what he might say at any given point in time. They said, Dali. Sometimes they would interview him and have these very peculiar interviews. But they said, Dali, do you believe in God? And so everyone expects him, being a modernist, a surrealist, and all to, you know, like, dismiss God and say he's an atheist or something. They go, Dali, do you believe in God? He goes, yes. And I'm like, oh, really? And he said, but I have no faith. Yes, I believe in God, but I have no faith. And I thought, oh, honest answer. He's saying intuitively in my heart, of course, yes, I believe in God. I don't have to apologize for that. I'm not ashamed to admit it. But because I'm modern, I can't admit that I believe in God. Everyone will laugh at me, say it's an unscientific position. Like that Bengali policeman who's telling me, you know, like, they're taking their notes down, and he says, you know, they always want to show, like, hey, I'm a Vedantist. I know some things, too. I'm not just a cop. And so he tells me, well, anyway, you know, it's all quarks. Everything's just quarks. And he's, like, writing in his little notebook. And I said, oh, is your wife a quark? And he's like, what? I said, how will your wife feel? You say, she's just a quark. She's just quarks, right? Nothing to see here. No, you don't want your wife to think that and you don't really think of her as just quarks, or no, you have some affection, some love, affection, etc. So, nishta means deep-rooted faith. It's not expected that in the beginning one has deep-rooted faith. Like sometimes people think, like, well, I don't know if I'm ready to be initiated or make this commitment because, you know, what if in the future I'm unable to? Well, then nobody should get married either. Why don't they say honestly at the end, like, do you take this, you know, and say, well, I mean, I would like to, but who can say what's going to happen in the future? That wouldn't be a good thing to say at that time. I mean, I'll try, but you know what I'm saying. You know what the statistics are. In all likelihood, this is not going to work out. But hey, I'll give it a shot. Thank you, dear, for that vote of faith and confidence. So, you know, still, and we can say, no, statistically, this happens, that, despite statistical analysis, to the contrary, still two people will come together and say, you know what, I believe in you, I believe in you. They'll take their vows and take them seriously as devotees do. So it's understood in the beginning, faith, if you had 100% faith, complete faith, you wouldn't be in the beginning stage. So some faith means what you're hearing, it's resonating, and you want to pursue that direction. Remember, we're the soul. She's buried under all these layers. Misconceived notions of self, acquired prejudice, acquired tendency. But peeping out, and hearing something that awakens this sense of prospect, that another sort of life is possible. Another sort of sensuality is possible. That's why I'm using the word super sensual, super sensuous. Doesn't mean, by definition, saying not of this world, but that means necessarily some sensuality in another plane. So, nishta means it's by following this the advice of Sadhu Shastra Guru and Vaishnav, engaging in service, then gradually this transition is taking place and faith becomes deeply rooted. And that means it can survive in the environment, just as when they have the seedlings, bhakti lata beads, you know, in the nursery, it's called in English a nursery, where they keep the baby plants, right, in a little pot. So, and they're called seedlings, like bhakti lata beads. In the seed stage, it needs to be in a very perfect environment. That's why it's advisable for someone newly connected to Krishna consciousness to live in an ashram, to get a solid grounding. So at nishta means it's like a deeply rooted faith. And just like after the seedling gets deeply rooted, then it can be transplanted and survive. So nishta means now faith has become firm and it's still growing, further developing. And ruchi, that means taste. You see, that's where now the emotions are coming back, but in a real and substantial way. They're not physically born, springing out of the objective physical world. It's not sentimentality, right? Or posturing, posing, acting, but rather it's some spiritual taste is there that, in other words, the activities of Krishna consciousness now are tasteful. And of course, they're relishing this taste, want to go further. Ashakti. Now, what it's an interesting word because like lolium, attachment and hankering. On the one hand, we're told this, you have to overcome this. And then we're told, and then what is the purchase price of Krishna consciousness? Lolium. So that must mean there's mundane desire and hankering, then going toward being cleansed of that. Raso varjam, raso pyasya, param dishva nivartate. Now it's resurfacing again. But now it's a spiritual sort of hankering and attachment. Bhav. The bhav ankur, we're told, at this point, the bhakti lata bij started out as a seed, then it was growing as a creeper. Now it's flowering, blossoming, flowers. And those flowers have a fragrance, an aroma. The devotion of that devotee has a particular color, aroma that Krishna finds appealing. Then prema. And as we told the other day, then Rupa Goswami goes further. After prema, what? Then divisions of Krishna prema. Sneho, man, pranay, rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. So, one thing, just as a sidebar, a footnote, there's no religion in the world that describes anything like this in such detail, so comprehensively, and step by step, stage by stage, it's otherworldly. It would, at minimally, have to awaken one's curiosity. How could someone describe such things in such detail and step by step? And then in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, give examples of all of these things. Very perfect examples that are extracted from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Puranas, and other places. That is Sri Rupa, the head of the Rupa Nuga line, wrote the book on devotion, the book of devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And there, as Brahma Ananda Bhavedesha, Chet Paradha Gunikrita, Naiti Bhakti Sukhambodhe, Paramanu Tulamapi. If you take Brahmananda, that means, you know, generic, spiritual, ananda, pleasure, happiness, that's so far beyond material pleasure, sense pleasure, as we told the other day, we were speaking about Shankaracharya and Jamunacharya. So pleasing that any remembrance of the highest sort, most intense, mundane erotic pleasure is repugnant to them. Right? Not, what's the word? In chanting, or is it repulsive? So Rupa Goswami says, if you take that pleasure of Brahmananda, of the yogis, the Paramatma yogis, the jnanis, what they might achieve in Brahman realization, and multiply it a trillionfold, it's not equal to an atomic fraction of the pleasure derived from Krishna bhakti. So when we're talking about feelings, the potential expression for feelings and emotions, in our present position, we cannot properly estimate the intensity of those emotional experiences. So we're reliant upon what has been described by Rupa Goswami and at certain places in the Bhagavatam, Charitamritam, etc. But we would be mistaken to think, like, the way we are at present, to try and analyze these emotions and color them spiritually or project them onto the higher reality. So Rupa Goswami warns about that also in his book, where he says that two types of persons, and it's not like it's other people, you know, it can be us. Right? We're prone to think when we hear these things like, oh, we should stay away from those people. Well, as the cartoonist wrote once, we have met the enemy, and the enemy is us. Udared atmanatmanam atmanam avasadayet atmayiva hayatmano bandhur atmayiva ripuratmana. Gita says the same thing. But Rupa Goswami says these two things to avoid. What? Sentimentality and acting. By sentimental, he's saying someone who cries easily over all kinds of things. They may also cry when they hear something about Krishna or take the holy name of Krishna. He's saying those are not, you know, premic tears. And the other, we call the Stanislavski method, the Russian acting guru, who invented this method in modern times, used by all the prominent actors, where he's saying, you imitate the character. You walk like them, talk like them, try to put yourself, you know, dress like, you do everything. You imitate them in every way possible, nonstop. So they speak of, like, some of these actors, they go into character for the duration of a film. You understand? 24 hours a day, they're in that character. Then they go on the set and shoot 5 minutes, 15, a half an hour. But when they come up, they don't for a moment break character until the movie is finished. There are not all of them, but there's some who are like that. They'll become that character for 3 or 4 months. That's the Stanislavski method. And he's saying, so when you do this, when you imitate them, their dress, their vocal patterns, their movements, their gestures, their type of thinking, one day you'll have an epiphany and you will have become that character. So this is prakriti sahajism, where they believe by imitating the super servitors of the spiritual world, their dress, their gesture, their movement, their thought, their speech, their this, their that, that they'll have an epiphany and realize, oh, I've become that person or like that person. So Rupa Goswami is saying, these two things, beware on the path of devotion. Sentimentality and posing, posturing, imitation. Early in the Bhagavatam, the slok, Savai Pung Sang Puro Dharmo, Yato Bhakti Radhoksaje, Ahoy Tukhiya Pratyata, Yayatma Supersedati. It says that Krishna consciousness proper, two things must be. Ahoy Tukhiya Pratyata means causeless, and in Guru Maharaj's words, irresistible. Right? Causeless, this is an interesting word. It means to say, there's no step and repeat process that you can follow to generate this. Again, a flaw of prakriti sahajism. You'll perform these activities a certain number of times or at a certain time of day, and you'll achieve that. No. That would be to eliminate Krishna's mercy and the mercy of his devotees. Bhaktya sangjataya bhaktya. The Bhagavatam says, only devotion can give birth to devotion. Right? We say, well, don't spiritual practices? No, spiritual practices under the guidance of a proper devotee, someone who has devotion, by serving them, yes. Not that by extracting this set of practices and divorcing connection from a pure agent that you'll get this result. Mahaprabhu, na prema gandasti dorapi mehoro. What did he say? I don't have a scent of the fragrance of Krishna prema, what to speak of a drop. That sort of culture. So why did I say this? Because Rupa Goswami, non-imitation. Yes. Oh, and irresistible. So Guru Maharaj, we get from a very interesting concept. So it means the proper devotees, rather than if they feel some sort of emotion descending in their heart to try and amplify that or bring it on, they're resisting that. They're trying not to cry, not to express these feelings, to resist. This is peculiar, but perfect. Why? Ahoy tukhiya pratyata. It is causeless and irresistible. They don't want anything false, and they know we have a strong tendency towards self-deception. So any sort of emotions or feelings coming are suspect. So their first line of defense is to resist that. They're resisting. But if it cannot be resisted, after genuine, sincere attempt to resist, then it qualifies as pure devotion, ahoy tukhiya pratyata, irresistible. Guru Maharaj says, Srila Saraswati Thakur, sometimes some tears, he is meticulously eliminating that and suppressing those things. Why? To not mislead others. If he would show such things, then, you know, the floodgates would open. Then all the neophytes would be imitating. Right? And Chaitanya Bhagavat, that story is there of Haridas Thakur. And the snake charmer is there, and he has the cobras And Haridas Thakur sees them as Anantadev. He sees Anantashesh. And he enters some divine state of ecstasy. And his body is showing ecstatic symptoms, and he faints on the ground. And the people are realizing he is a Siddha Mahatma, Mahapurush of the highest order. They're taking feet dust and considering themselves fortunate to be in the presence of such an exalted soul. But it's mentioned there, one envious Brahman, he's seeing this and thinking, what? Why are they doing it? I can put on a better show than that. Then he makes a show of exhibiting some ecstatic symptoms and feelings, and then he's lying on the ground, and the people come over and they start beating him. And he's going, why? When he was doing that, you're all taking feet thus and worshiping him, and I'm showing and you're beating me. They're saying, yeah, because you're an imitationist. He's a genuine devotee of the Lord. His heart is overwhelmed. These spiritual feelings and emotions are coming to him. He can hardly suppress them. And you're imitating those things and thereby mocking the actual devotees of the Lord. We're told by imitating the Mahabhagavata, we will go down. And it's a mockery of what they're expressing. And interestingly, so Guru Maharaj, and we've seen, any picture you've seen of Saraswati Thakur, he's the personification of gravitas. Right? Picture after picture, this personification of gravitas. But Guru Maharaj said, when he would, in a closed circle of his intimate disciples, privately, when he would recall the sloka from Raghunath Das Goswami, from the Bilapa Kusumanjali, Ashavare Amrita Sindhu Mayi Katanchit, Kalo Mayati Gamita Kila Sampratam Hi, Tvam Chet Kripam Mayi Vidasha Shinaiva Kimme, Prane Vrajena Chaboror Ubakarinapi. It's expressing, Guru Maharaj said, this is a direct prayer to Radharani. And he's expressing his heart's aspiration to serve her holy lotus feet. There are so many slokas given there. Some of them are very confidential. And you'll see others, they're running to those to give some explanation, to gain a cheap following, so that their deluded disciples and followers will think that they're on some intimate plane of devotion or achievement. Saraswati Thakur, this sloka Guru Maharaj said, which is an aspiration for the service of the holy lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. When expressing this, who was meticulously removing a tear, suppressing any public emotions, privately with a core group of senior servitors, Guru Maharaj said, sometimes he was crying uncontrollably, reciting this sloka, and his heart becoming filled with the similar aspiration of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. And what does he say? A sequence that, because this is after the disappearance of Mahaprabhu and Swarup Damodar, and Raghunath Das Goswami is feeling so much separation from them and thinking, how can I go on living? What is my reason for living? And so then he expresses this verse, this direct prayer to Srimati Radharani, saying, what's been maintaining my life is this aspiration for the service of your holy lotus feet. If that is no longer a possibility, then of what value is my life? I've lost my purpose. And then he says, and not only that, what is more valuable than my life? Vrindavan, Braja, that's of no value to me without you. And going higher, further, deeper, and in Guru Maharaj's words, he said, I know this is a shameful thing to say, but without you, Krishna is a dreadful thing. That's Bakari, the demon killer, not seeing the sweet, enchanting Krishna. Oh. Such high things, high sentiments, divine emotions. Hankering from, you know, Raghunath Das Goswami, the Prayojan Tattva Acharjan, the Rupa Nuga line, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we should not think that these are things that are cheaply got, easily achieved. Guru Maharaj said, what we hear generally, the general tenor of, you know, ontology, you know, Atmagyan, etc. He said, from the Bhagavatam and the Gita and elsewhere, this is sufficient to keep us and keep us focused while with our service aspirations, but in the background, knowing these higher things that are expressed, there is a time where that comes. Because I remember once in the garden in Los Angeles, Srila Prabhupada in the afternoon, he would sit there sort of chanting japa and then talk to people, and someone was asking them, like, is there any, you know, enjoyment in Krishna? Or it's all like, you know, sense restriction and all these things. And Prabhupada described this process. And when he got to, it's like the Rupa Goswami sequence. And when he got to like bhava bhakti and prema, he said, I'll never forget, he said, then enjoyment. But Guru Maharaj will say, because some people might be misled by that, but Prabhupada wanted them to know, you know, so he just spelled it out. But Guru Maharaj introduces this concept of compound interest, that the devotee is serving and their aspiration is only for service. But then the interest comes in the form of ecstasy, spiritual emotions and feeling. And we're told, what will those devotees' response to that be? To take that compound interest, means take that interest and increase their expand their serving capital. That's their preference. But, and we hear Rupa Goswami gives two examples. He's saying, Daruka, Krishna's charioteer, his driver, who one of his services, you know, it's not only to drive the chariot, sometimes the chariot stops. So his service is to fan. And sometimes he's fanning Krishna, and he becomes lost in the beauty, the inconceivable beauty of Krishna. Yang shama sundaram achintya guna swarupam. And divine emotions begin to flood his heart, accompanied by ecstatic transformation, one of which stamba means he becomes like stone, like a statue, cannot move. And we're told, and Daruka, what is he thinking? Like, oh, how fortunate I am to experience this ecstasy. He's saying, oh, damn this ecstasy. Now I can't fan. It's interfering with my seva. Why did this have to come? That's a devotee. That's a servitor. It's come to him. It's flooding his heart. He's overwhelmed. And he's saying, I can't serve. It's annoying him. And Radharani, other example he gives, and she sees Krishna, and her eyes are flooded with tears. And then she can't see Krishna. So they're ecstatic tears, but she's saying, why did this have to happen? Now it's blurring my vision of Krishna. So that answers your question. But Guru Maharaj said, but what we hear in general, that is enough to keep us. And knowing of these higher prospects, that gives the devotee some inspiration. Hare Krishna. Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha. Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan.
Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan.
Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan.
Giridhari Gopinath
Madana Mohan. Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Adaita Chandra. Garadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Rupa Sanatan Bhata Raguna. Sri Jiva Gopala Bhata Dasa Raguna. Echai gochai kori charana bandan. Jaha hoite vignanash abhishta puran. Echai gochai dharmui tarodas. Sansabara padareno mora panchagras. Tandera charana sevi bhakta saneva. Janome janome more abhilas. Echai gochai jave braje koilovas. Radha Krishna nitya lila korilo prakash. O anande bolo hari bhaja vrindavan. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majayaman. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pad Padma Koriya. Hari Nam Sankirtan Kohe Narottamadan. Hey Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Haribo, 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 go to Haribo.
Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharja Asatara Sada Shri Srimad Shri Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Om Vishnupad Shri Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai.